Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the special edition of the 40 Seas Fire Internet Soccer Show World Cup qualifying, the big match in Columbus, Ohio at the Cruz Stadium, USA versus Mexico. Everything on the line, not just for the USA for qualifying, but I don't think I've ever said this. Mexico trying to right the ship if possible. Joining me right now is Eric Gomez from Goal.com, as well as ESPN FC, covers the Mexican national team and the Mexican Primera Division. Joining us very soon will be Carter Krishnayer on the USA side. But Eric, since we have you on right now, you know, while it is a very exciting time to be over in Columbus, Ohio, and at the same time, you might have to say it's a little nerve-wracking for Mexico, because I've never seen them in this position. In, you know, as, when I've gotten back into the game of soccer, football, I mean, what is going on down there, and why did it take the FMF so long to make this change to sack De La Torre?
Yeah, and first of all, thanks for having me on the show. The reason why I think they took so long with the sacking was precisely because they didn't really think that they would have to sack him at all. The condition that was put forth after the Gold Cup was quite simply that Mexico needed to win September 6th against Honduras at the Estadio Azteca. And that was something that I don't think anybody ever really had in doubt. This was an absolute surprise by, you know, no stretch of the imagination would we have expected Mexico to lose to Honduras. We had been somewhat used to watching Mexico struggle against CONCACAF teams in 2013, and I think that maybe even a draw against Honduras would have been enough for the FMF to pull the plug on Chepo. But I think that after the result against the Ivory Coast, a lot of people were excited about Mexico's chances. And going into that game, the first 5-10 minutes were fantastic. Mexico scoring a goal, getting up on top, and it just kind of unraveled from there. So the issue is they went from not thinking that they would ever have to sack him after this game to, you know, the inevitable has happened, and now we need to look forth for a new coach to be able to right this ship. As we take a look at the game that's going to go down in about 30 minutes, I mean, I think I'm very, very pumped for Mexico's chances, even though this game is going on in Columbus, which has been absolutely hell for Mexico in the last 15 years or so, because of, you know, quite simply, you get that emotional boost when a new coach is brought in. I think a lot of the players were just dissatisfied with Chepo, and now they're really looking to get any sort of result, any sort of positive result that's going to give them confidence towards those last two hex games, and they just might be able to pull something out here, especially with all the absences on the U.S. side.
Absolutely, but I guess my other question is this for you, and then we'll bring in Carter Krishnayer. Do you think this change is too little, too late? I mean, I know they got two games in October, like everyone else does. They're going to be hosting Panama, and then they're going to have to be on the road in Costa Rica. But still, is this change too little, too late, maybe?
It could be if they it very well could be if they don't win against Panama. I think that game is winner-take-all. A lot depends on what happens tonight, of course. I mean, if Panama is able to get any sort of result out of Honduras, I think that puts a lot of pressure on those three teams, not just Mexico and Panama, going into the final stretch. If Honduras takes care of business as they are expected to do against Panama, then it becomes a two-horse race for that fourth spot. And Mexico has the advantage of hosting Panama at the Estadio Azteca in October, with most likely, you know, a new manager, because there's a lot of rumors flying about that current interim boss, Luis Fernando Tena, is going to resign his post after tonight's game, no matter what. I think it's just kind of a power play, expect the FMF to commit to him, but we'll see. And essentially, it all boils down to that one game, disregarding pretty much what happens tonight in San Pedro Sula in Honduras. So what we're about to see here in Columbus is more a sense of Mexico just trying to right the ship by any means necessary and trying to pull out at least a draw to be able to go into that game in October with some sort of momentum. So, I mean, is it in danger? Absolutely, yes. But is it dire? Is it, you know, is Mexico in dire straits? Is it too little too late? I don't think so.
Kardik, and of course we have Kardik Krishnayer here for World Soccer Talk. And Kardik, for us on the northern end of the border, we've never seen Mexico be as, I have to say dire straits, because I think that we've never seen a Mexican side ever be this, I don't know what to call it, to be honest with you. It's a draw after draw after draw at the Azteca. They haven't scored a goal. They haven't conceded a goal until the Honduras home match this past Friday. They lose 2-1 at home. And I've never seen Mexico looking this bad throughout qualifying in my, you know, ever since I came back into the game.
Yeah, and give Suarez a lot of credit on Friday. His changes in the second half really changed the complexion of that match. Mexico was very comfortable in the first half, but I felt like Honduras, particularly when Bengston came in, and Bengston was pairing up top with Costley, were very dangerous from that point on. They got the two goals. They could have had a third. They were very, very good. So Mexico, that was not a case where Mexico played badly in the first 45. It just got away from them after a couple tactical changes from Honduras. But, yeah, I think there's a crisis of confidence, but there was a broken relationship between Chepo and many of the players. And we'll see what happens tonight as far as Mexico's energy levels and enthusiasm. Because, look, we know they have the quality in their side vis-a-vis CONCACAF to beat anyone in this region, anywhere in this region. They just haven't done it in the last 12 months. Now, prior to that, Mexico was on as good a run as we've seen from a team in the CONCACAF region in some time, prior to the summer of 2012, culminating with their under-23 team winning the Olympic gold medal in London. So they are in crisis, but the quality in the side is still unmistakable. You still have players like Gurdado and Chicharito and Jorge Salcedo, just guys that can win matches for you. And Gio, obviously, Gio dos Santos. So I wouldn't sleep on them tonight. I think the U.S. have a lot of question marks as well. Things have been going well until Friday for the U.S., but that's almost papered over a lot of the deficiencies we've seen in the team that you and I have talked about before. Daniel got on a good run, obviously, in qualifying and in the Gold Cup, but there were very obvious deficiencies in the U.S. side that may get exploited tonight. And even if they're not exploited tonight, they're still there for the world to exploit next summer.
Well, maybe so, Kardik. We'll see what happens. And at the moment, as everyone knows, Michael Bradley is definitely out with the sprained ankle that he rolled on while warming up down at the National Stadium in Costa Rica. Jeff Cameron is suspended on yellow card accumulation. The Matt Beisler yellow card, or shall we call it a phantom yellow card, where the Costa Rican player just basically tripped over himself, pretended he got hit by Matt Beisler. And then, of course, the stupid yellow that Jozy Altidore took that eliminates him from this match. And, of course, we have the depth now to see if it is there for the United States after everything that's happened in the Gold Cup this past July and winning the championship of the Confederation, Kardik. Now you got Kyle Beckerman in here. You got Clarence Goodson in here. Eddie Johnson's been promoted to as a starter in this game. And Alejandro Bedoya is going to be in the midfield on the right side. What do you think Klinsmann is going to do with this setup? Will it remain a 4-5-1, or will he go for a traditional 4-4-2?
I think it's going to be more of a 4-5-1. Alejandro Bedoya, an interesting choice. Spoke at length with him yesterday about him yesterday with Robbie Musto, who was his coach at Boston College. Obviously now NBC's one of NBC's Premier League analysts, and with an interview about the Premier League, will be released in the next 24 to 48 hours by World Soccer Talk. But we spent some time talking about Bedoya's qualities, and he really likes Bedoya starting on the right wing, cutting inside, and being able to use either foot, right foot or left foot, Musto does. And I think that that's what Klinsmann's looking for today. That's why Bedoya has replaced Zusi, in addition to the fact that Bedoya tracks back with more frequency and regularity than Zusi does. As far as Fabian Johnson at right back, that's a very interesting selection by Klinsmann. Risky shows a real lack of confidence in Michael Parkhurst, who did not get himself a transfer from Augsburg, where he's not playing in the Bundesliga. It's great to be in the Bundesliga, arguably the top league in the world. I'd say the Bundesliga and the Premier League right now are neck and neck for the top league in the world. But Parkhurst is not playing at Augsburg. He hasn't played a minute. He hasn't logged a minute this season. Maybe he should have gone back to Scandinavia, where he was playing regularly before he moved to Germany. So he's a guy that I think Klinsmann was counting on, which will run the low out to perhaps lock down that right-back spot. But when you're not playing at the club level, you're not going to play with the national team. So he's calling on Fabian Johnson. So we'll see what happens, because this is very much an experimental lineup, in a sense, that's dictated by suspensions. You see these in qualifying matches. We saw Stevie Ralston inserted in the lineup in 2005 in this match in Columbus after a couple of suspensions and injuries. He ends up scoring the second goal, but he's not on the plane to Germany that summer, the next summer, which was disappointing for him, but he scored a goal against Mexico in the big qualifiers. So some of these guys are going to play big roles tonight, Daniel, but they won't be in the team next summer, and that's too bad. I mean, in an ideal world, the guys who qualify you would be the guys who go to the World Cup, but that's not the way it works.
That's very true, but Eric, I have to say, though, there's no Michael Bradley once again. There's no Jozy Altidore, probably two of the most dangerous players the U.S. has, the up-and-coming players for this national team. Obviously, you still have Donovan out there, Clint Dempsey out there on the offensive side of the ball. Tim Howard's in goal for the U.S., but if Tania, now the interim coach, and it sounds like, as you said, it's only for tonight, but it could be a power play for him to be the full-time coach by this coming Saturday, that maybe the trigger might be pulled. What does Tania need to do when Jurgen Klinsmann pulls out his starting 11 to try, you know, to try his tactics against Jurgen Klinsmann's side here?
I think Tena has already won the first round strategy-wise. I think Jurgen Klinsmann, being the cerebral, prepared guy that he is, had Chepo pegged. You know, he knew absolutely what players Chepo was going to use, what formation, the way that Mexico is going to play against the United States tonight, given the fact the strong possibility that he was going to be on the bench. And I think that he knew that with weeks or months beforehand. Now that Luis Fernando Tena is in charge for Mexico, I think that Klinsmann, as much as Tena had 3-4 days to prepare for the United States, Klinsmann had 3-4 days to prepare for Luis Fernando Tena. And that's pretty huge. And knowing full well that the United States was going to be without, in my mind, not just two, but three really important players for this matchup, the third guy being Matt Beasler, that really gave Luis Fernando Tena a huge edge in planning out this match and putting his lineup out there. Mexico is going to be going with a 4-2-3-1. Two holding mids in the center of the pitch, Jesus Zavala and Fernando Arce. Two guys out wide, Andres Guardado on the left, Giovanni Dos Santos on the right, and Chaco Jimenez playing a more offensive, an attacking midfielder role for him. And he's going obviously right behind Javier Hernandez, Chicharito. So it really boils down to who's going to control the middle of that pitch. I don't think that Jurgen Klinsmann is above rolling back his strategy the same way that Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena really used to use Mexico as a punching bag in these sorts of situations. Just wait, hold back, and wait for the opportunity to counterattack and then just get Mexico off the break. But I don't think that that's what Klinsmann is looking for in this situation, especially at home. He hasn't really shown to be that type of manager. So, you know, it boils down again to who controls that midfield. And without Bradley, I mean, gosh, the U.S. just loses so much. And, I mean, I know Kyle Beckerman quite well. I've been following him for years now. And he's a good player, but he's not half as good as Michael Bradley is. And I don't think that he's going to be able to share the load in the middle of that pitch. to be able to do what Michael Bradley does. So Mexico really does have a huge opportunity here to take hold of this match from the early going and really kind of stamp their authority. If they can get an early goal, I mean, man, that place is just going to be so quiet, in my opinion, and we're going to have a real, real classic on our hands, given the circumstances that we've been put into with this USA versus Mexico.
Absolutely, and we'll see what happens here. The lineup's already out, everybody. Quickly for Mexico, Jose Corona, the captain and keeper. In goal for Mexico, Carlos Salcedo, Diego Reyes, Fernando Arce, Christian Jimenez, Giovanni Dos Santos, Javier Hernandez, Chicharito is in there, Hector Moreno, Jesus Zavala, Andreas Guardado, Hiram Mayer. Now, and I guess I have to ask you, Javier Hernandez has only played 18 minutes for Manchester United, Eric. Do you think he'll be effective in this game? Or do you see him maybe playing the first half and then they sub him out for someone coming off the bench?
This is not the first time that we've seen Javier Hernandez come into a Mexico camp or do a big game with the Mexican national team and have that sort of prolonged absences from the pitch, not getting enough minutes with Manchester United. I think that the situation here is a little bit different. I mean, he did not have a proper preseason. That was because he picked up an injury with Manchester United late July. So, you know, now he's healthy. I think that the injury was kind of a blessing in disguise because he had played the Confederations Cup with Mexico, had gone to three matches, scored a couple of goals against Japan, scored a goal against Italy, and really kind of not had the proper rest over that summer, if not for that injury. He's coming back from it. Again, 18 minutes for Manchester United. I think those came against Liverpool last weekend. You know, it doesn't really become a huge factor in my mind that Chicharito hasn't had enough minutes at the club level, but it is definitely something that we should take a look at because you're pretty much able to tell which Chicharito you're going to get during a match during the first 20 or 30 minutes or so. And if he's darting around that box, going around defenders and being just all around an all-around pest for the U.S., then you'll know that he is on a good day of sorts. If he's a little bit laggy, if he gets caught offside a couple of times, a little bit overeager, then, yeah, you might be looking at a Chicharito that is not 100%. We didn't see him much against Honduras. Of course, Peralta started ahead of him for that match, Peralta scoring a goal and now on the bench. But Hernandez will have a chance to really kind of put up or shut up in a huge match. I mean, he's been good for Mexico, really good, over the course of his national team career, but I think that this is the type of match that is going to define him going forward, and it's going to tell Mexican national team fans a lot as to whether he will be able to carry that team to Brazil 2014 and beyond, or if Mexico should just keep searching and hoping and praying that Carlos Vela comes playing for the Mexican national team pretty soon.
Absolutely, and Cardick for the USA, Tim Howard is in goal. For the U.S. and the starting 11, of course, once again, Tim Howard in goal, Omar Gonzalez, Kyle Beckerman, DeMarcus Beasley, Clint Dempsey, the captain, Landon Donovan, Alejandro Bedoya, Jermaine Jones, Eddie Johnson, Clarence Goodson, and Fabian Johnson out there. And, of course, everyone is saying through the great coverage of pregame here by ESPN that Kyle Beckerman is going to be helping out the defenders, he'll be helping out the back line, cleaning up any mess that's going to be there. If Mexico attacks, you're going to have Jermaine Jones up with the offensive midfielders. We've said Bedoya's on the right. Eddie Johnson will be up top behind Clint Dempsey as well as Jermaine Jones. And DeMarcus Beasley, once again, will be coming down the left side as the left back. How much confidence do we have in this starting 11 right now, Cardick?
Well, as Eric points out, without Michael Bradley, who is arguably the best, the most influential player in the CONCACAF region, he's one of them certainly, you know, along with Bolaños and Ruiz and Gio at the top, and Roger Espinosa now in that category too from Honduras. That's a huge loss. Couple points, though. I think Eric made a very good point about Jurgen Klinsmann and the style. He was brought in to change the style of play. Now, while the U.S. has been successful hitting Mexico on the counter in the past under Arena and Bradley and winning these Dos Acedo matches in Columbus, if he were to play the game the same way and get the same result, people would be disappointed because his change is a lot about style. So he almost has to take the initiative and attack, which will leave some gaping holes, particularly with Bradley out for Mexico. So that's the first thing. The second thing is Chaco Jimenez is in Mexico's lineup, which I find very interesting. He's a player I've liked for a long period of time at Pachuca and Cruz Azul. He's a player that Argentina tried to cap tie a couple of years ago, called him in for a couple matches, didn't get him off the bench. Mexico has smartly, and I think actually Chepo was forced, Eric can give us more details on this, but Chepo was forced to include him by the board of the FMF for these qualifiers. Obviously, Argentine-born, really classy player. I find his inclusion very interesting, and even though he's now in his 30s, again, he's new at the international level. He's a top player. I think he could make a difference in this game.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that Jimenez is a player that I think, like most other Argentine-born or naturalized citizens of Mexico, became kind of a polarizing figure in that national team. A lot of Mexicans really don't like it when foreign-born players are included into that Mexican national team squad. But Jimenez has been one of the best players in the league ever since he came to Mexico back in 2004. It was very smart. I mean, whether it was forced or not, it was very smart for the Mexican national team to include him because he gives Mexico a really kind of a different type of player that they've been lacking for some time. They had tried to turn Giovanni Dos Santos into that player. Gio is a completely different type of midfielder. I mean, he's way more comfortable on the wing. And Jimenez is just a guy that's going to take off from, I think, just about several feet in front of the holding midfielders and really try to connect with those wingers and give Jimenez, or rather give Javier Hernandez, some space to be able to pull some defenders along with him and create opportunities for that midfield to really take hold of that offensive positioning. Jimenez, I think it was pretty fairly speculated that he was not going to start this game because Tena, having coached the Olympic team a year ago, really has a liking for Hector Herrera. Hector Herrera, of course, playing for Porto now in Portugal, a really great player who nonetheless is also very young. So the fact is that he includes Jimenez in here, and he not only gives Mexico a talented player in the middle of that pitch, but he also gives them a veteran leader, which might sound a little bit weird knowing full well that he only has two caps with Mexico to this point, but a guy who is able to really kind of take the edge off, take the pressure off other guys to be able to do their thing.
Now, let me ask you guys this, and Eric, I'll go with you first, and then I'll go to Cardick. Same question, but different scenario, obviously. Eric, if Mexico is behind by a goal, say the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, what do you think Peña needs to do to adjust his tactics as well as maybe the formation for Mexico to try to level and, if possible, to get ahead in the second half?
Well, at that point, I think it's kind of a crapshoot because that's exactly what Klinsmann would want to happen in this situation. I think that would be the ideal situation for him to be able to say, okay, we're up 1-0 on Mexico. Their reaction is going to be to go all out and try to get that 1-1 so we can just kind of sit back and pick them apart as we have done in the past. I think that that is the U.S.'s best strategy at this point, knowing full well that Mexico has really not been able to answer that when playing the U.S., especially on U.S. soil for the last 15 years or so. You know, 2-0 is pretty much based on that tactic, to just sit back and wait for Mexico to tire of attacking, play really good, solid defense, and just be able to lash out front with Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, and whoever's up front as your starting striker and score a goal. If not that, the U.S. always has a pretty big advantage on Mexico in set pieces, and we might see them try to get ahead that way, you know, with corner kicks and free kicks. Mexico's height is definitely a disadvantage, and that's something that is pretty much never going to change for Mexico. So if they go down early, it's going to present a pretty big problem for them because they really have nothing else to do other than to just go for it and attack willy-nilly.
And, Carter, the same question. If the U.S. is down by a goal, what do you think Klinsmann's going to do with tactics and formations? What do you think he's going to try and do to change it up to try to equalize afterwards and then maybe in the second half going for a go-ahead goal here?
He might push the fullbacks, both of whom are attack-minded players, midfielders by trade at the club level, Fabian Johnson and DeMarcus Beasley, further forward. And leave Jermaine Jones a little further back for cover with the back two, with the two center backs, Gonzalez and Goodson. But the U.S. won't panic if they fall behind, whereas Mexico, it seems – what we've seen in qualifying is when Mexico concedes a goal, then there's or doesn't score for large periods of time at Azteca, there's panic that sets in. I don't think you'll see that panic among the U.S. However, again, I and Eric brought it up earlier, I cannot overstate the loss to the United States for losing Michael Bradley. While there's a lot of talk that the U.S. is this strong team, deep team, there's one player above all who is a game changer for the U.S., and it's not Clint Dempsey or Landon Donovan. It's Michael Bradley, and he's out tonight, and that's a very big deal. And he was the key guy in this fixture in Columbus four and a half years ago, as a younger player, as a less seasoned player, a guy that was on the upswing at the time. But now it's just a classy, cultured midfielder whose positioning sense is more important than anything else. Tactical and positioning sense is unlike any American player I've seen in 30 years, quite frankly. I'm not saying he's the best American player in 30 years. I'm saying he's the most tactically savvy American player that I've seen. So that's a big miss.
Mm-hmm. Well, both teams are entering the field at Columbus Crew Stadium, the big, giant American flag being waved in the northern end of the stadium, sold out Columbus Crew Stadium once again as USA take on Mexico. Your referees for this match, it is the Jamaican Courtney Campbell, his assistant referee, the first one Ricardo Morgan, the second one Garnett Page, and the fourth official is Valdine Legister. So we'll see what happens when Courtney Campbell is going to do with this matchup. And gentlemen, let's get predictions here before we close off this pregame show. Eric, you first.
I'm going to take a 1-1 draw here. I think that Mexico is actually going to take a lead over the U.S., and the U.S. Definitely has the home field advantage. They've been playing a lot better, so I don't think Mexico is going to be able to hold that lead, and we're going to see a 1-1 draw here tonight.
Cardick.
Dave, I actually have the same scenario, Mexico scoring first in maybe the first 25 minutes, coming out with this energy now that Chepo's been sacked, and the U.S. clawing their way back into the match, using the crowd to their advantage, using the confidence they've developed over the last few months to their advantage, a 1-1 draw, which is it may be disappointing for both sides, but that's actually a pretty fair result. It'll be good for Mexico going into the huge fixture against Panama in the next break, international break, and then for the U.S., it gets them very close to qualifying.
Well, gentlemen, you know, obviously, this is a very intense rivalry. We all know this. Obviously, the better sense would be a 1-1 draw, and I will go with that. But I'm going to sneak in a second prediction here. I can't see Mexico scoring first, and I will see the U.S. equalize. But I just have a funny feeling if it's going to be late twitchy bum time, as they say in England, I could see the U.S. pulling out a second goal, and they could win this one 2-1. So I'll accept a 1-1 draw, but I got a funny feeling if it's going to come down late in the match, 2-1 USA. Eric, thank you very much for the time. I'll see you at postgame. Cardick, thank you for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time. So that's it, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to this special pregame show. ESPN has it, USA versus Mexico. We will definitely see you at postgame, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. Join Robert Hay along as well with Eric Gomez as we do postgame here on the 40 Seasons Fire Internet Soccer Show. The United States, if they win, they are in to Brazil next summer and the draw this coming December. for Eric Gomez from Goal.com and ESPNFC, for Carter Krishnayer from World Soccer Talk, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you at postgame here on the 4C's Fire Internet Soccer Show special World Cup qualifying USA versus Mexico. Enjoy the match, everybody.